Anxiety runs in my family. My mom and my sisters have it. I have it too. While most people can relax after work or playing games, I constantly have a knot in my stomach. When I'm playing golf, I'm so anxious over the ball, it's hard to imagine any kind of shot. One year, the three of us decided to play Torrey Pines together. I played a mostly unremarkable round, then we pulled up to hole 15. It's a downhill par 3 with the ocean behind. On any day, it's a beautiful hole, but on that day, there were people parachuting in the background and two Osprey helicopters hovering in the ocean. It was a beautiful sight to behold. All anxiety disappeared, enjoying the view. I didn't hit a great shot on that hole, but that didn't matter. What mattered was the memories that we made. I will never forget playing those holes together on that beautiful course. These are the moments we play for. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome back to For the Record, the podcast where three nerdy golfers try and take our game a little bit more serious. And my favorite review of the show so far is, well, at least the audio sounds good. On today's episode, we've got highlight reel, we've got an at the turn, a this or that, and a birdie bev. But first, before we jump into any of those, I was not able to golf with you guys last week. And I hear there's a pretty important round recap that we need to go over.
Important? Interesting. I would say interesting. I don't know if it was important.
I mean, I guess we can start by talking about the golf. The golf was pretty good. It was nice to be out there. We played the white tees because I'm still rehabilitating and you weren't there to goad us to the blues. So,
any scores of note?
I put up a handy 46, which I feel is pretty good post-rehab. So not too bad at all.
I got like a 54, I think.
Yeah. So, but both of those scores could have been better. We talk sometimes that you get paired with people on the course and you have no control who you're paired with. We were paired with a third, and we will not mention his name.
I will mention he's from Eagle Mountain.
I'm going to say he's one of the worst people that I have ever been paired with playing golf in my life.
He was definitely the worst for me.
And he cost us strokes.
We've played with some pretty interesting golfers before that have affected our game negatively in the past. What made this guy different?
Let me give you a small just taste of the kind of problem that we had. So the par three, we played the back nine, so you're familiar. The second par three.
Over water?
Oh, no.
The second par three.
The super generous
yes,
kick left.
Yes, okay? Yes.
So the super generous
so,
kick left.
Quick view for our listeners. This is a very short par three, maybe 115, mm-hmm. and everything funnels towards the green. Everything.
Yeah. It's
well, unless you go right. If you go right, you're out.
Yeah.
You go right,
left.
You're dead. So I hit a handy, smooth pitching wedge and was a little long of the pin, but not too far. Eric kind of pulled one a little bit left, so he had a chip down the hill.
Yeah, it wasn't too
bad. And our esteemed third blocked one so far left that he was in the fairway of the par five.
Wait.
Yeah.
That's like 80 yards to the left.
Yep. Yes. So he's up there.
He drives up there.
He drove across the par three back up.
Across the green.
Across the green to get to the par five. He drove on the naughty side of the signs to get up to the par five, drives up there, gets to his ball, chips it down. It doesn't check at all, so it rolls off on the right-hand side. He's still short right, so you kind of know the position where he is.
So I chip on.
Yep.
And I'm not super close to the hole, but I'm between him and the hole.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I am playing ready golf in the meantime while he's driving his cart back down to actually being in play and getting to where he can chip his third shot. I lag putted mine, and I'm going to tell you that is the greens were lightning fast.
They were super fast.
They were
fast.
So burned out and so fast. Like I tapped that and we thought it was going to trickle in the side. Like we thought this was going to be the greatest birdie ever, and literally it had trickling pace. and then proceeded to trickle another 12 feet.
Yeah. They were okay. So fast.
It was crazy. So I was 12 feet down below, and so I was lining up the par putt to maybe get a par putt, and I wait for him to chip. He chips his on. It's slightly outside of mine still. And I'm just like, I'm going to play some ready golf or something of that nature. So I'm just going to walk up and give him a chance to get his putter, which he didn't have. He had to go back to the car and get it. I am addressing my ball. I'm taking my club back. I'm clearly swinging towards the ball. Another ball, like, hits right in front of my ball. It's his mulligan chip. And he did this all round. Like, he chipped multiple times. He putted multiple times. There were times where he had three golf balls on the ground at once. It was unbelievably confusing. And he just hit them whenever. He had no regard for what we were doing. And it cost me that stroke for sure. I blocked that putt.
That same hole, I'm between him and the hole. So the guy chips on. It's really short. And then he putts. So I'm like, oh, I'll go now because he's between me. But he didn't like that putt. So he putted again and then again and then again and then one more time, all of them short between me and the hole. So I couldn't putt. Well, he's putting four times.
And walking off of that hole, he said, that bogey hurts. That bogey that he got with, what, 10 mulligans?
And then the people behind us, because he was so slow in doing this every single time, they had caught up by then. He noticed a pink golf ball in the grass. He turns around and starts driving back to them and starts yelling at them for hitting into him when they hadn't even started hitting yet. They just walked up and started getting ready. And he was just a piece of work.
Eric and I were so ashamed. These poor people that are behind us, we're playing slow because this dude is crawling, right? We're not playing badly, Eric and I, but I mean, a guy who's hitting three or four extra shots per hole just takes time to do that, and he probably lost a dozen golf balls, and he looked for every one of them. And so there's a twosome behind us, and there's no good opportunity to let them play through because we're always waiting on this doofus to go there, and they were so patient, and they were so kind, and he yelled at them and was so mean to them. They came up to us in the parking lot afterwards, and they're like, we couldn't understand what your buddy was yelling. We're like, he's not our buddy.
We're not with him.
We're not with him. We're so sorry for anything he might have said. He was a very strange person to play with.
So
interesting.
Just real quick, a couple highlights from the round. So after that par three, there's that par four around the water. He got out his 5-wood. I got out my 3-wood. We both creamed those and got around the water on our first hit and then just chipped. We didn't have to go over water at all on that one.
Wow.
And then my round highlight for that one was on the par five that's up the hill, the next one. I did an okay drive. I chipped and landed. You know how there's that greenside bunker?
Mm-hmm.
So I had that greenside bunker between me and the pin. There was not a lot of room. It was going to go off. And so I was like, I'm going to try and flop it. Tried it a few times and just went for it. And it was beautiful. One hop stopped. Whoop. It was great.
It was so glorious.
Awesome. So I have a couple of questions then regarding your wonderful playing partner. So the good news is it sounds like you're not going to be replacing me anytime soon.
Not with that guy.
Not with that guy. Brandon, where are you?
So it's kind of, I've played with some really interesting people in the past that have made me question why I'm out there on the course that day. And it sounds like it was maybe one of those evenings. Did you just not feel comfortable at any point to call him out on any of this?
Oh, no.
Because at what point do you just be like, hey, dude, like, I don't care how many times you hit a shot, but you can't hit like five shots in front of me, especially when we're playing slow.
When my buddy is about to blow up, I have a hard time talking to my buddy. This dude seemed like on the verge of a rage attack.
Yeah, he was angry all the whole time.
And I'm not, it isn't worth it to me. It isn't worth
it. He went through a ton of balls as well. He was losing them right and left.
And here's the deal. Like, I lost maybe a stroke, arguably two, from being hot at one point. I know Eric was out of it a couple holes because he was just so embarrassed by this dude.
Well, and like, I couldn't take time with my putts because he putted through me every time.
Putting out a turn. And
he hit one of my putts. He putted. I went to putt. He putted again and hit my ball.
One of my favorite things is Eric. So clearly the dude hasn't played a lot of golf either. He's just learning. I guess that's okay. At one point, Eric marked a ball because I was away. and he put his putter to the side, as we often do, so that he's not putting his ball mark in my line.
Yeah.
Right? That guy proceeded to do that every time he marked his ball for the remainder of the round. He kept putting his ball mark in our line. Like, his ball would not have been in our line.
Yeah.
And he's moving it out sideways. I'm like, are you trying to stymie us, man? It was so frustrating.
Interesting.
But here's two huge takeaways that I would like to point out from that round. Number one is very sad for me, and it's very happy for Eric. And that is, I believe Eric has completed his boss battle book.
Oh, yes, I did.
Nice.
He is done. So he has finished his boss battle. I believe, Cody, you have also finished yours.
I finished mine about 4 or 5 rounds ago, yeah.
I am the last one.
Because you just never get in bunkers.
I'm never in bunkers.
is that all you have left is the bunker
yep.
beast?
He did kiss the water hazard wizard.
I have had 2 opportunities out of a bunker all season.
You know, I specifically told you, because you wanted to complete your book, I said, aim intentionally for the bunker.
Yeah.
And you still haven't. You can't get yourself to do it.
I can't do it. It's implicit bias. I'm so bunker averse, I can't make myself do it.
And our bunkers at our home course are not terribly in the way. You miss and you hit in the bunker. We need to go to a course where a bunker is literally right in front of you.
Let's go to Tobacco Road. I've seen pictures of that place. It's like a bunker with some grass. But I told you I had 2 takeaways from the round. The second one is that I'm swinging at about 3/4. I'm feeling okay. I've lost a little bit of feel with my irons. Like, I'm having a hard time getting crisp iron contact. I don't think I'm far off from that. I think it has to do with shaft lean. But when I get back to 100%, you guys are in trouble. That driver is a weapon. That thing is insanely good. I cannot believe, just a little dink, how far that thing goes. It is magnificent.
When he gets his full power, he's going to hit back to the left again and then adjust
his... Yeah, I'll just add the power back.
I don't know. So I was thinking about this because the flex on the shaft that you have and the high degree of loft, adding more speed is not necessarily going to give you a ton more distance. I mean, maybe a bit, but...
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see. He'll adjust the weight on it and mess it all up again.
We're going to find out. I'm tremendously optimistic.
All right.
Well, I'm glad that I wasn't there then because I don't know if I would have been able to keep myself from saying something.
Oh, I said it a couple of... like.
To him?
Yeah, I was like, can I putt now? Or are you still going with your mulligans? And he was like, oh, you can go.
So you know how sometimes
no, that's the thing though.
They're being crappy.
It's okay to suck at golf. We suck at golf.
Yeah.
It's okay to play poorly, but I think that there's a number of, this is what we talk about when it comes to etiquette. I don't care if you play 10 balls on a hole, but if it gets in my way or slows the group down and puts us behind, that's where it becomes a problem. Read the room.
I don't care what your score is either. And I've played multiple balls on a practice round when I'm by myself on a Wednesday afternoon when there's like nobody on the course, right? I think we've all done that at some point. When you're paired with people, that's not the play. And when you're paired with people and other people are chomping on your heels because you're playing so slow, it's definitely not the play.
You know what he reminds me of? That kid in the group project in his class that, you know,
nobody
comes to you at the very end of the school project, hey, can I put my name on the slides?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh my gosh.
Well, good A for effort, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know. If growing the game...
Maybe it makes me think growing
the game brings more dudes like him to the course, let's shrink it a bit, shall we?
Should we start telling our course that they should offer etiquette courses?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, yes. Okay.
And it could be loosey-goosey.
So
it's the whole airport mentality. If you see something, say something.
All right. We're going to talk about a little highlight reel. Today's subject is, what was your best shot of the last 5 rounds we've played? Should I start us off?
Yeah, if you got one.
The best shot of the last 5 rounds. I mean, so there's the best result that I've had, and then but it wasn't a great shot, and then there's the best shot that I've had.
I want to hear both now. I'm curious.
Because there's the chip in for birdie that I had.
Yeah.
But I sculled it, and it was not a great shot. It was a great result, terrible shot.
It was emotionally magnificent.
My favorite shot that didn't necessarily have a perfect result was on that par three that's over the water where they moved the tee box off to the side, and I shot it up through that and landed it on the green. That was a pretty difficult shot, and it went just off the green, and I still made par on that one, and I feel like that was a great...
Oh, yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, and that was our first competitive round, and we got rained out, but I feel like that shot was like getting it through those trees and getting it on the green. Now, our third got that within 6 inches. His was amazing.
He did.
Mine wasn't quite that good, but I still felt pretty proud of that one.
Yeah.
That was a good shot. That really was. Cody?
I've got mine, yeah. So I in the same vein, I have two little short ones because I don't know if I would call it my best shot, but in terms of like classic, this could be filmed and put on what a golf shot should look like, is a par four, and my drive was just to the right side of the fairway. I think it was on hole like 6 or 7 when I hit my 7 iron, and it just flew like straight at the pin. And when it landed, we like, oh, go in.
When
I landed,
when
like
this
was probably 3 rounds ago, the week before
the rain
round.
Okay.
When my 7 iron just like was going straight at the pin, and when it landed, almost disappeared behind it, and I was 4 feet out. Granted, I missed the stupid putt, but it was like textbook. But I'd say that my best shot was probably that 40-footer putt that I made last week.
So on that the story three. Behind this, we talked about our overcompetitive round. This is hilarious. So second hole we're playing in this round, Cody just snaked in a putt from like 45 feet.
Yeah,
and it was tracking the whole way.
Uphill.
And I'm trying to keep Eric in the game, and Eric is kind of a little bit off. And I'm like pulling the flag out, knowing that the ball is going to go in, and it trickles right on the side of the cup. And Cody's, of course, shocked that it goes in. He's super excited about it. And under normal circumstances, Eric and I would be going wild. We'd be doing the sand people thing with the putters over our head. And I just look over, and I'm like, nice putt. Throws ball back at him. He's so deflated.
Yeah, and I apologized later, but I was like,
it's fine.
I didn't celebrate with you. I should have.
No, there was the residual from our little confrontation. I get it.
Nice
but,
putt.
But that was definitely like the best shot, I think, of my last 5 rounds.
Nice 45-footer for birdie. Good job. Have a ball.
All right, you, John Paul?
I am going to say that having the ability to play golf, even in a limited capacity last Thursday, every time I swung the club was wonderful. I feel good. Cody got to see it on Thursday. I'm not a wounded flamingo anymore. Like, it's instant relief.
We're in trouble. Already. We're in trouble, Eric.
No, because we're competing with each other, not against each other, but... on the 13th hole, which is the par 3 over water, being at the red tee brings that up into about a 75% 52 degree for me. So it's a nice...
Is that up by the drop zone?
It's back behind the drop zone. It's behind the drop zone, but it's the very front of the tee box.
And it's just like the side of... So like there's very little water trouble.
Okay.
Yeah. But I just knew it was going to be a nice, smooth 52. I put it up on a little tee. Just swung down on it, and the result was good. I mean, it was relatively close. I believe we parred the hole with a tap-in par. It was just an effortless tap-in par. But just being able to swing a golf club and just see the ball sail on that nice high trajectory, land really soft on the green, I was just like, man, I've only been out of it for a little over a month, and I was like, I missed this game, and it was nice to be able to play. So that was my best shot. I just... had that moment. I held the follow through. Just sat there watching the ball. It was majestic. It's time now for another At the Turn. And all of us are big fans of RPGs, whether they're video games or board games, any role-playing game. Cody has an interesting question about RPGs, and we would like to know how this relates to golf.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. This is kind of an At the Turn meets talk nerdy to me a little bit, because it's a little nerdy mixed with some golf talk. I play a lot of video games with my brother. He lives out of state, so it's one of the things that we can do to kind of keep in touch regularly. And we end up kind of playing a lot of RPGs. And I was just thinking about, as I was putting different stats into different areas of a character in a game I was playing, and if we were able to treat our golf game like a real-life RPG, and you are starting as a character with your current golf stats that you have right now as the golfer level that you are, where would you spend your experience points when you level up?
What are the characteristics we have?
I think the sky's the limit on this one. Do you want to hit it harder? Do you want less accuracy. Dispersion? Do you want accuracy? Do accuracy. You want to putt better? The thing is, you need all of them. So any of you guys ever play Tiger Woods golf games back in the 2000s, early 2000s?
No.
So it had some semblance of this where you could put points like into your putting or your driving. You know, you basically, by the time you could get to the end, you had a maxed out golfer that was just, you know, basically amazing at everything.
Yeah.
So accuracy for you, Eric, you would bump all your points into accuracy?
Yeah, if I could get better to stay on the fairway and get on the green more, my putting isn't great, but it's not bad. I lose so many strokes to my chipping. Being able to eliminate that would be huge.
I think you just named four different categories. I think that your accuracy with your irons is different than accuracy with your driver, and chipping is a whole different ballgame in my eyes.
Well, my accuracy with irons, usually when I'm missing the green, it's not by much, and it's left or right. I'm usually close enough to the green that if I had accuracy with my irons and could land it on the green with my irons more, I wouldn't need my chipping as much.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. What about you, John Paul?
Well, it's an interesting question because when I play any RPG, I'm generally pretty good about being balanced. I like a balanced character, and so I'll do a little bit here and a little bit here and a little bit here and a little bit here. And I think golf naturally does that over time. But in this scenario, I am not doing that. I am maxing out my putting stat as fast as I can. Because if I had a chance of holing everything on the green and I'm not missing any six-footers, I save enough strokes that I'm happy with my game. I would love a little extra distance. Everybody would love a little bit of extra accuracy. That's not a problem. But if I somehow, when you're playing in any kind of match with anybody, draining a long putt, it's a backbreaker. It's the most powerful weapon in somebody's arsenal is being able to sink a long putt or being able to drain one or save a par. That feeling of rolling one in is incredibly satisfying.
Is it because the last time I did it in two rounds when I was playing against Eric, I sunk two very long, great putts, and all I got out of you was a nice putt.
Yeah, we've already covered that, and I already apologize, so I don't appreciate you continuing to bring it up. But what I will point out is that you and I have played a lot longer than Eric have, and we played a lot of times together. How many times did my short game irritate the crap out of you?
Many times.
Right? And it's just so, like, there's a lot of guys who like to stand up there and bomb it off the tee, or they can hit these incredible long irons. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter. If I can drain the putt, you're still screwed. I'm still beating you.
And that's the thing, though, because there'd be times, like, when we play, and if my driver's on point, you never say, oh, man, look out. But if my putter is on fire, you're like, Cody's a force to be reckoned with today. Yep. Because the driving is hit or miss, and the irons are there. It's your short game. If you're dialed in with your putter, you've got it made. So but I'm kind of with you. When I generally am a balanced player most of the time, but there's just something so fun about min-maxing. And I think that putting is one of those stats that you put it all in. And I feel like that's what pros are doing on the PGA Tour. They are chasing speed. You look at Rory, and yes, he wants to hit the fairway. I don't think he cares if he ends up in the rough. He just wants to get it as far out there as he can because he knows he wants to give a short iron into the green almost every time. I don't think that you watch him play the leaderboard is guys that can hit it really far. And Tiger Woods really kind of broke the code with that because he was just hitting it so much further than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we know a little bit what that feels like. So we've done some forward tee challenges over the last couple of weeks, and hitting a shorter iron into a lot of those is very appealing. It makes the game a lot easier.
Yeah, and our scores were a lot lower. Granted, we were scrambling, but we've never scrambled that low before than from the short tee challenge.
Not even close.
But long term, I would love to have better accuracy with my driver, more consistency, and my putter. I feel like my irons at the current level that they are get me by. Chipping's okay. My iron's okay. I got to have less dispersion. You've said this many times before to me in the past, John Paul. It's hard to have a two-way miss because a lot of times when someone has a driver, your miss has typically been to the left with your driver. Uh-huh. And Eric, you and I can lose them outright when we kind of lose our drives. I've somehow worked in trying to work on my swing, sometimes where I'll pull it quite far left, and sometimes I'll still bring out that slice. And so now I have a two-way miss with my driver. That makes it so hard because I can't just adjust where I'm aiming for my drive. And I could narrow down that dispersion with some stat points, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I did. I was watching, it was a YouTube video. It was a playoff of a bunch of the YouTubers. And one of them, I think it was FP, he asked Grant Horvat, like, how are you being so accurate? He said that he was working on getting closer to the ball. And he's like, I get uncomfortably close to the ball when I swing. And he's like, it's like magic. It narrows down the dispersion like crazy. So I'm going to be trying that this next week.
Hmm. Interesting, because there's probably less angle for things to go wrong, I guess.
He says it takes out the inside out or outside in. He's like, you have to go straight down on it.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'm going to give you an honesty moment. Are you ready, Cody?
Yeah, let's do it.
Are you ready? I know why you've got your left hand miss. Do you want to know?
Yeah.
You have a dramatic outside to in swing path.
Yes.
It's dramatic. You know this, right? Your follow through is inconsistent. Now, to explain this for those who don't know, Cody brings his driver quite high in his backswing. So he's got it high up over his head, slightly outside of what would be considered a standard swing path. He's always been that way. It's fine. He can deliver a lot of power. When he comes down through it, he generates a tremendous amount of speed. But once he gets to the bottom, there's one or two ways that he will go. One way is he will follow through with that swing and he'll finish high. The second way is that he'll fall back on his left foot and finish low. And when you fall back on your left foot and finish low, you impart a tremendous amount of English onto the ball, and it curves right. And it curves right hard. We call that your power fade, your Donkey Kong fade.
That's fair. Haven't seen one of those in a while, thankfully.
Well,
but
here's the thing. You've done that for so long. There's no way you can see when you line up to the tee box how far left you line up.
Yeah,
but it is
left. It's far.
You are playing for a humongous power slide. Now, here's the problem with that. And this is why I'm giving you an honesty moment, because you've got to address this. Okay? Because if you do get the power fade, you are wasting so much power bending the ball in the air that you're getting 220, 230 yards and you're ending up in the fairway, and it's fine, but it's not great. But you're aimed so far left that when you finish high and your path is true, you're absolutely blistering it in a dead straight line, 300 yards, exactly where you're aiming, which is usually left,
yeah,
which is never good on any hole at our course. There is no hole on our course that is anything you hit with a driver where there is any forgiveness left. Left is always dead at our course.
It's true.
That's fair. I don't disagree with anything you've said.
So the reason why I say this is because we talked about this a little bit behind your back when we had our round on Thursday. You've got to take this winter in the sim, and you've got to address path.
Man, okay, that scares me, swinging in the sim.
I know, but when else are you going to do it? You can't adjust like that on the course. You can't be thinking that on the course. So you either have to go out to a range now before it gets cold and break your hands on range balls, or you wait into the sim. And don't fix it with your driver. Fix it with your irons. The driver will come for free, because your irons are where it's more pronounced, where it punishes you worse. Because if you look at your irons, when you hit them good, you hit them good. But when you miss your irons, have you ever seen the divot that you take? It's at a 45-degree angle to the line to the pin. It just swipes across the ball. It's ridiculously outside to in.
What I'm taking from this conversation is that you guys talk about me when I'm not there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And I feel very loved.
A ton.
We missed you a
mostly
lot.
Mostly we make fun of your physical appearance. And
I would.
I'm just kidding.
No, thank you. That is some good notes. I know, and I don't know if you've noticed, my scores that I've been able to post the last 5 or 6 rounds have been quite good.
Mm-hmm.
And my dispersion has gotten a bit better. And my drive, the banana peel power fade, I feel like I haven't seen a really bad one of those in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to be a bit lower with my drive. When I bring my driver back, I'm trying to be a bit more shallow,
yeah.
I think, with it.
Mm-hmm.
But we've talked about this before, how you said you just need one thing that might help is developing just a little guider to put out there.
Yeah.
And I legit can't do it.
No.
I have to swing. If I put any power back on my swing, my timing's all off. And it's like the timing belt in my body is just shredded.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
But no, thank you for that.
Cool.
I'm not going to, you know, be self-conscious about that at all next time I play.
Well, and this last time that we played, every time John Paul got up to hit a drive, he had me tell him, slow and easy, John Paul. Slow and easy.
It's so hard. It's so hard not to swing at it.
Well, I don't know if you guys remember this. In talking about how if I hit it true and it goes straight a million miles, on hole 18, this happens all of the time where I just don't like those trees to the right and the driving range is right there. Mm-hmm. So I aim quite a bit far left. And I think I've made it to the first tee box like half a dozen times.
Yeah, it's pretty consistent.
Oh, I nailed my drive on that one last time. It was
That's awesome.
That was beautiful.
All right, we have a new thing, a new segment. This or that?
This or that. Yeah.
All right, so today we're talking crunchy or soft tacos. What's the take, John Paul?
I'm going to go crunchy, but I think you're going to have to come back to me and talk amongst yourselves for a moment because I'm going to say some things about tacos that many people are going to find really offensive.
What is offensive that's about a great tacos?
That's a great way to lead off a subject. Okay, I'll go.
I'm going to be very controversial with my opinion.
I am.
If I'm doing soft, I'm doing a burrito. I'm not doing a taco.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like a taco is crunchy. I like a crunchy taco. It's the shell that does it for me, that corn tortilla crunch.
I am 100% team soft taco.
I don't know if I've ever done a soft taco, to be honest.
Every time I go to a Mexican restaurant and there's like, it comes with tacos and I'm like, that's got to be soft tacos. There's an upcharge. I don't care. It's my avocado guacamole. I don't care. I know it's get charged extra. It's fine.
Why not just get a burrito?
Because I don't want a big burrito. Now, there is a caveat. I'm going to add a caveat along with John Paul, and I don't know if this is where he's going. Hopefully not. My favorite item of all time that is no longer available used to be the Taco Bell Double Decker. Do you know what the Double Decker was?
I do know what the Double Decker was. It was gross.
What are you talking? How is that gross? It was a crunchy taco wrapped in a soft tortilla. It was the best of both worlds.
Here's why it was gross. Every time I got it, it was so drenched in grease that the hard taco was soft. And so everything was just soft and it was just no good.
I don't think you've ever actually had a Double Decker. I don't believe you.
I did. My favorite was the Crunchwrap Supreme.
Oh, okay. I think they still make that.
Yeah, it's so good.
Okay, John Paul, I want to hear your controversial opinion on this. To be fair, if someone said all you're having tonight is crunchy tacos, I would eat it. I'm not a snob.
What's your racist thing you're going to say?
Oh, gosh.
This isn't racist. This is my upbringing, okay? I'm gonna admit openly.
Plain saltine crackers.
That tacos are a very sore subject between my wife and I because of the way I was raised. So let me say that now, my favorite tacos in the world are soft flour tortillas, but it has to be off a taco truck. I don't go to a restaurant to get a taco. I go to a truck to get a taco. The best tacos in the world are at trucks.
That's fair.
Okay? So I love a taco truck taco. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they're great.
I want to make that clear before I explain what was explained to me as a taco when I was a child and I grew up thinking was a taco.
Well, and just to be clear, a difference between a taco truck taco and what you get at, say, Taco Bell or, you know, Del Taco.
Vastly different.
They are incredibly different. They're two different foods.
Yeah.
They just are.
And that's what makes it confusing. But my mother, bless her heart, was not an incredibly gifted chef. Now, she had a few dishes that are quite good, as all mothers do. On balance, there wasn't a lot of variety there. And my patronage is Danish. My parents are both from Denmark. They're not big into spicy food. And probably Mexican food, Hispanic kind of origin food is not going to be something that they're well-versed in. But my mom would cook plain ground beef, not salted, not peppered, no spices, just ground beef.
Like no cumin or anything?
Nothing.
Oh, wow.
So plain ground beef. And we would take a hard taco, and their hack was they would put a few drops of soy sauce in the bottom of the taco.
Soy sauce?
This allows the taco shell to become soft so it doesn't crack when you grab the taco. That adds a little bit of salt. Then you put this completely unsavory ground beef on there. Then you put a little shredded cheese, which is not unusual, right? Then they would crumble hard-boiled eggs, and the sauce that would go over the top was Campbell's cream of chicken soup.
Oh,
and
gosh.
This is what my parents called a taco.
What is this?
Growing up. Okay.
Did you have it often?
Very frequently. I would say, if not weekly, bi-weekly. Okay.
Gosh, so that's weird. First of all, my immediate follow-up question, I know you're not done. If I handed you one of those right now and you took a bite, would it be nostalgic?
Absolutely. And I still eat these, okay? Oh. My wife, when she makes tacos, will make two batches of everything. So she's got like pico and onions, and I have Campbell's cream of chicken soup and cheese. And when I talk about their shredded cheese, we shred the cheese now. But back in the day, that was my mom taking Kraft singles and cutting strips of it.
Oh, no, stop.
Yeah. Okay, so
we need to have you make us one of these tacos and try it.
We have a number of foods we need to try. Because we can't
judge. It sounds awful, but we need to try it before we judge.
So this is the thing. Like, everybody I tell this immediately goes, that's not a taco. I know it's not a taco, okay? But here's the deal. I love a soft flour tortilla taco off a taco truck. I love a hard corn taco that has been absolutely vaporized by my growing up experience. They are not the same food. They can't even be qualified as the same food. And so it's very hard for me to say which one's better because I love the one from when I was a child, but I know that it is not good food.
All right. Well, we need to try this sometime.
Wow. So I've got a running list of foods that we've talked about that sound quite interesting, to say the least. We're going to add that to the list. Also, we never did the ground beef hot dog.
We never did any hot dog of any kind.
Yeah, with smothered in cheese. We have some cooking ahead of us, gentlemen.
Maybe for the final round, we could do a cook-off.
So I have a question then. Toppings on a taco. Like, what are you doing? Are you going chicken? You going beef? You going pork?
It depends on where we're getting it. If I'm going to a taco truck, I'm going to do their chicken or their pork. I feel like the ground beef...
I do their steak.
Oh, you are, if they have steak. I feel like ground beef, you're going to be the same regardless of where you go. So you don't. That's your fallback.
Making it at home. We're having a taco night, so we're just going to have a whole bunch of toppings out.
My wife doesn't eat anything but chicken, so we're going to chicken.
Okay. What if you were showing up at somebody else's house and your wife wasn't there? Still chicken?
No, I do pork.
Okay. I mean, every time we go to a restaurant, John Paul and I look at Eric and be like, oh, he's going to get the chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
He likes chicken sandwiches.
I do like a chicken sandwich, but like this last time we went to Jim's and I got myself a nice tasty omelet and it was delicious.
So one of my favorite soft tacos is actually from Del Taco. Their chicken soft taco is really good. And it has a white sauce on it that it's not hot or anything. It's just like a nice creamy soft taco. But if I want something that is a little bit more traditional with heat, or if I'm going to add like a hot sauce on it, it's got to be ground beef.
See, this might be a controversial take on my part. I feel like ground beef tastes the same in pretty much every meal. It's got that same flavor. So that's why I like chicken, because you can really flavor it differently. I like pork, same reason, and steak even, but ground beef is just ground beef.
Interesting.
I love a carne asada. Mm. An asada is a great, that's a strong taco, but I will say that I had a wonderful taco in LA, maybe, that was a street taco, and it was made with Filipino pork belly. Oh my gosh, that taco was so good.
Did it have cheese sauce?
It did not have cheese sauce.
So one final follow-up to this, just because I was thinking about how do we put a golf swing on this? Not everything has to have a golf swing, but that's where my mind goes a lot. When I'm sitting in the doldrums of, you know, trying to get some work done or other things, responsibilities that I have, I often find my brain on the course. How effective do you think a taco would be as an at-the-turn snack?
Total fail.
Oh, it'd be terrible.
Total fail.
Burrito, win.
Yeah. No, there's no reason for a taco to be there.
Burrito versus the hot dog. What do you think is in terms of better? Because I feel like you could eat a burrito a bit easier, but by the time you get to like the 16th, 17th hole, you might be paying the price and having to maybe run to the...
What kind of burritos are you eating?
From the sketchiest Mexican restaurants I can find.
The Maverick breakfast burrito, eating that, that's a good start to a day.
But they would all bow down to the sausage roll.
It's true.
Never tried it. We'll never know.
At the turn snack, we need to build a ranking list, our power rankings. Ranking.
Maybe next season.
Yeah. Okay, great.
I love it.
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
So today we're doing a little bit of a different Birdie Bev. Can you get that open? We're trying. Did I already have it open?
was the saddest looking thing I've ever seen. Eric's over there. It looks like it's lacerating his hand, and he hands it over to Cody. Can you get this open? And Cody just like pops it off.
It's seriously, look at my fingers.
Oh my goodness, give me that other one.
Well, wait, we'll do that one next.
Okay. Explain what's going on, Eric.
So we have two of the same root beer. Cody's brother sent us a root beer, and we happened to pick one up at a nearby store, and we've had some issues with some stuff from that store, so we're going to do a taste test. I'm the only one who knows which one is which, so I will pour it. We will do the first ranking and then the second ranking, and then you guess which one is which.
Yeah, I think the idea is we want to know if maybe there's some quality assurance issues or if an older root beer loses its, you know, savor.
I think that's fundamentally the issue, because I don't think it very much matters how you store or anything of that nature. I think it has to do everything with age. It has a Best Buy label. It does that Best Buy label mean anything? Because I think that there are things in the world where that doesn't make a difference. And I would have told you that soda was one of those things until I started drinking diet soda. You go drink a diet Coke that's older than about a year, it's nasty. It hurts bad.
It's true.
Do you want to introduce this root beer?
Absolutely. So the two of the same beverage that we're trying is the Cicero Beverage Company Salted Caramel Root Beer. Mm-hmm. And the label on this is quite pretty. It's a, you know, a metropolis city with a river of salted caramel running through it. And this one has been on our, you know, go-to for a long time.
In reality, if you had the chance to swim in a caramel river, I know that sounds great in theory.
Oh, no, it would be terrible.
How quickly would you die? Like, I don't think you survive floating in a caramel river.
Well, and along those same lines, like the Willy Wonka River of Chocolate, no, it's not for me.
Give it a sniff.
Caramel.
All right, here we go.
Like caramel.
Non-diet scale, correct?
Yes.
Do you know what's interesting about that root beer? It claims to be a caramel-based root beer, but it actually, I taste butterscotch, like a lot of butterscotch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I imagine that they probably tried to do that because caramel is going to be harder to distill.
To be fair, maybe I'll save my comments till later.
This is the second one?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
This is making me question literally all of our rankings on our list.
Yeah.
Can you guess which one is which?
Okay. Are we ready? Are we locked in?
Go ahead.
My guess is that the second root beer is from the store that will not be named.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was mine as well. Like, it's gone dead.
It's obvious.
There's no complexity of flavor. The notes are so much more mellow. There's no brightness.
It was more akin to sparkling water than a root beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first one had a lot more flavor and notes to it. Yeah.
Great deal more complexity. So freshness makes a difference.
The second one from the store that shall not be named wasn't terrible. It wasn't like that first one that was just no flavor. It was awful. This one was better than that, but it's not as good as the second one, even close.
So I'm curious, did you guys give numerical rankings?
Yes.
Yeah.
So should we go with the first one, which is the fresher root beer?
Yeah. I gave it a 6.5.
Same.
I gave it a 6.5.
Wow.
That is remarkably consistent. And I like the butterscotch note.
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was very rich.
Yeah.
But I would happily drink it. I mean, it's quite nice.
I couldn't have a lot of it. I would have to nurse it over some time.
It's almost overly sweet, which is why it doesn't get a higher one for me. That butterscotch exactly is really overly sweet.
What I was going to say a little bit earlier is that I don't know if you guys have had the butterscotch soda that's supposed to be like from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It is way too sweet.
It's terrible.
This reminds me of what that should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say this would be a fun one for Halloween.
Yes.
I agree. In fact, if you slapped a Harry Potter label on that and called it a butterbeer, I'd buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
totally.
Now, I ranked the second tasting of it, the older root beer that's past its expiration. I bumped it all the way down to a 4.
I did the exact same.
Whoa!
I'm kinder. I gave it a 4.5. So we're remarkably similar.
I did 4.5 originally, but then the more that it sat in my mouth, the more I didn't like it, so I went down to a 4.
For the record, people, I don't know if there's any such thing as a root beer connoisseur. But if there is, three of them might be sitting at this table.
So that means that a freshness factor is a range of 2 to 2.5 points on our 10-point scale.
That's huge.
Well, and that one that was completely bad, that I wonder if it had opened or something.
It was zero or one, an inedible.
It was so off. I wish we could get, it was the Judge for Yourself root beer, was that what it was? I wish we could get a fresh one, but I think it was a limited run, so there's no chance.
Yeah, I don't know, but this is opening my eyes into, like, if I've ever had a bad diet soda before or a regular soda, I've never paid attention to, like, how old it is.
That's something we need to
and
look at.
And now I care.
I think that's going to make a big difference going forward when we pick these up. We're definitely going to be checking, because if we're at a road trip and we stop at some middle of the nowhere place and we look at it and we're like, oh, this is going to be bad. It's not even going to be worth picking up. But, you know, if it's fairly new and you've never seen it before, yeah, we'll grab it.
I'm glad we did that. I'm glad we didn't just do this in two different types. But I'm saying, like, the manufacturer knows.
So,
like,
how so I think is. Here's the litmus test. If we have to blow dust off of it, let's not buy it.
Agreed.
Or at least look at first if there's an expiration, because when you buy your Coke Zeros or your Pepsis at the store, I'm sure those have an expiration on them.
Do you know what I use as an expiration? This is my litmus test, because I have a soda machine at work that's an old decommissioned soda machine that we manually fill. And you can tell the unpopular drinks because they all have specialized labels. So it'll be like, you know, March or April and you'll get a Super Bowl can or or like a superhero from a movie that came out like a year and a half ago. You're like, I don't know about this one.
That's awesome.
It's like going to the hardware store and buying the candy there. Like, kids are like, oh, let's buy candy. And you're like, that candy has been there for years. Don't you dare touch it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're getting a Dr. Pepper that looks like a football out of a soda machine right now, you know, buyer beware. That might not be very fresh. Yeah,
football season is starting. Those promos are not out yet, dude. Thanks for joining us on For the Record today. We're glad you made it through the episode. And the question that we want to pose today, that we want a response from you right now: what are the ideal toppings on your taco of choice? Let us know at fortherecord.com, forerecord.com. We have a contact us form at the bottom of the page. Or hit us up on our socials.
And if you think that Campbell's Cream of Chicken Soup is an appropriate taco sauce, I need to know so that we can get together and have lunch.
Leave us a comment on our Blue Sky or Instagram, and like, comment, and subscribe on wherever you're listening.